Hello and welcome to the Island Library Podcast. I'm Laura from Laura Knows Buckley.
And I'm Jo from Pages of the Moon.
And today we have another book club episode.
Whoop whoop!
In March, we read, quite unusually, three books. Because this time around, we decided to go for a full trilogy. Now, if you've listened to, I can't remember which, but one of our book club episodes from last season, one of the books that we read in our fantasy month was A Curse So Dark and Lonely by Bridget Kemmerer. And we enjoyed chatting about that so much that we decided as a book club to go through all three of the books together. So today we do have a bit of a challenge in that we are going to be talking about three books in one session. We have a plan to make sure that things stay as organised as possible. We are going to, as usual, pitch the books to each other. Then we are going to go through book by book, spend a few minutes just talking about what we thought were the strengths and weaknesses of each one. Then we'll talk about how we felt the whole trilogy kind of hung together and developed over the course of the three books. Now, obviously, it is going to be difficult to do a spoiler-free episode for three books in one. I think spoilers for book one are inevitable because you really can't talk about what happens in the rest of the trilogy without discussing what happens at the end of book one. We will try to keep things as vague as possible for books two and three, but, you know, in book two in particular, there may still be things that we have to mention or discuss that give things away in terms of plot developments and character arcs. So just bear that in mind. If you haven't read them yet, maybe set this aside for just a moment. Won't take you long. They're very easy reads. Or if, you know, you're partway through, maybe finish the book off first and then come back to listen to us talk all about our thoughts about them. But we will try, as usual, to avoid major spoilers as much as we can and talk instead in kind of generalities about the writing and the characters and that kind of thing. So, Jo, do you want to pitch first?
I will. So, my pitch for the Cursebreaker series is three books, two princes, one queen. A story of curses, magic, war and hope. When Harper finds herself in Emberfall, a kingdom quickly turning to ruin, she doesn't ever think it's a place she will stay. Not when her life in Washington, D.C. continues on without her. But when bonds are made, new friendships are forged, and love blossoms even in the coldest of winters, who will rule and who will fall? A Beauty and the Beast retelling, mixed with many other fairy tales, the Cursebreaker series is one not to miss.
Ooh, interesting.
You know what? Just to big myself up for a second, okay? Because I think we can all agree, as regular listeners of this podcast, that Laura is the queen of pitches, okay? And I am occasionally a very strong princess. But today, I was so psyched to give this pitch because I was like, yes, beeholes, this one is sick.
That was great.
Yeah, so a little hair flick. Try and follow that one.
Okay, my one is a little bit longer than my usual pitch, for obvious reasons, I think. But here goes. In another world, running alongside ours, magic has a hold of the kingdom of Emberfall. One of the last remaining magic users has trapped the castle in a curse. Prince Wren is doomed to repeat the autumn of his 18th year until he can find a woman to fall in love with him. Each time he fails, he turns into a vicious monster, terrorizing the very people he's supposed to rule. He and Grey, the commander of his now demolished royal guard, have been through this cycle more times than they can count. Then Grey brings Harper back from our world, and finally it looks like things might change. Harper's hometown of Washington, D.C. translates in Emberfall to the Kingdom of D.C. She rallies the people around Wren, persuading him that there's more he can be doing for his lands, even with the curse in play. She's a breath of fresh air, and she helps both Wren and Grey to find hope in what has seemed a hopeless situation. When the curse is finally broken, though, it is not without sacrifice, or lingering questions. Grey has disappeared, and Harper doesn't know what her true feelings are towards Wren. Rumours swirl throughout the kingdom about a secret heir to the throne, challenging Wren's right to rule. The brutal neighbouring kingdom of Sile Shallow is poised to invade, and Harper's promises of reinforcements from DC are starting to ring hollow. There are no easy answers, and with war seeming more inevitable by the day, desperate people may turn to desperate measures.
Dun, dun, dun!
Indeed. Okay. We did obviously talk about book one previously. So there's probably not as much to say about that. But, you know, we're talking about the full trilogy, so we better start there. Anybody who listened to the Curse of the Dark and Lonely episode previously will know that I loved this book wholeheartedly, just had a whale of a time with it. So, Jo, what did you think of book one?
I really enjoyed it. I had started it, I think, the last time when we read book one as part of the book club, because I read at the same time These Violent Delights. So I only managed to get about a third of the way through, I think, before the discussion. And I did really like the writing, I liked the pacing, and I liked the characters, especially Harper. I thought she was such a strong female character. Being able to get the chance to read the whole book, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved all three of the main characters. Grey became a bit of a standout for me, but I still wholeheartedly wanted to throw hands for Harper every second of the way. And I also grew to really see how layered Ren was during book one, because immediately when we meet him, I think because you know it's a Beauty and the Beast retelling, you sort of have some conceptions about what you think he's going to be like. But actually, he's so much more layered than the Beauty and the Beast that we know from Disney. So it was really nice to meet like a fresh character who, you know, he wasn't as happy about the situation either, but he was just trying to do his best. I don't know, I just warmed to him more and more, even if he was just became more difficult.
I think that's really fair.
Yeah, I just thought the characters were really what made the book, even if it was just smack bang in the middle of like Derbyshire, which is where I live. I think I still would have really enjoyed the book because of the characters, which is a credit to the author.
For sure. I felt like, you know, it's not necessarily a revolutionary book in terms of YA fantasy, but I do think that it was a really fun and interesting take on the story of Beauty and the Beast. And like you said, it is 100% the characters that make it. The way that the relationships develop between the three of them over the course of that book was so interesting. You know, the way they came to understand themselves and each other better, and the kind of the trust that built up, I think was a major selling point for me. And of course, Harper was just a really cool character. One thing that I think, since, you know, we're trying to talk strengths and weaknesses of these books, one thing that bugged me a little bit is there is a bit of a not like other girls vibe. So apparently, although they've been doing this hundreds of times, apparently she's the first girl they've brought who's shown any interest in the stables and learning to fight. And that just seems a little odd to me. All of the other girls apparently just liked the pretty dresses and ate the fancy food. And yeah, that rang a little hollow for me, because I reread the first book to go through the whole trilogy. And I think the first time I read it, that didn't stand out for me as much. But on the second read through, when I came to comments like that, I sort of thought, really? Hundreds of girls and they all were just fashionistas? There's a bit more to most of us than just that.
I think they did mention that some tried to escape, but to no avail as well. And I was like, okay, so it's death or pretty dresses and, you know, being sent back. The only thing that, upon reflection more so, after I began, I think it was the third book, but I kept thinking to myself, why doesn't Grey just take Ren to the other world? Like, I mean, they've already abandoned everything. And but it never really explained that you couldn't take Ren somewhere else. And I was like, well, that would have really answered a lot of their issues, unless he would still become a monster. But it's not very clear. But I'm just thinking, like, they could have just, like,
upped it. That's interesting. I wonder what would have happened. So Lilith, for readers who either don't remember or aren't familiar, Lilith is the name of the sorceress who has put this curse on them. Now, her magic obviously still works in the other world, because otherwise when Grey went over there, he wouldn't be able to get back. So I have to assume that the curse would still have been in effect if Ren had gone over there, because the curse is on him specifically, isn't it? As well as it's on the castle more generally as well. That's what kind of keeps the castle in its own little time bubble. But yeah, it's interesting that they never considered that.
Yeah, it's just never like something that's really explained. I think it would have been interesting even if they had tried to do it and failed. Because I think I remember in the first book as well, Harper obviously rides out and the weather changes, doesn't it? Like as she's riding out, as the magic sort of fades off the place. And I'm like, so is it location based as well? Because why don't you just move? Why does he just abandon the castle?
Well, they could abandon the castle, but he would still turn into a monster, I think. There's no reason. She's put the curse on the castle to keep the castle in autumn forever.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that that's the limits of her magic. But I know what you mean, that it wasn't really kind of discussed.
Yeah, it was just, for me, it was just a flaw of the magic system.
I think one thing that we talked about, we kind of mentioned this in the first book club, and it came up a little bit again when we talked about the full trilogy. There were a lot of things about the magic that were not explained in perhaps as much detail as would have been nice.
Yeah, which is all I mean. Like, I don't mean like I would have liked to have seen him abandon the castle, but it's like there's not really much explanation as to why, after like hundreds of girls and all these seasons, neither of them think outside of the box slightly. I know he's tried extreme ways to end the season by like hurting himself, but yeah, I just, more so as I got later on into the series as well, I was like, okay, I don't really get this magic system as much as I love the characters. But just as you said, just to keep it fair, of all the things I loved, it was the magic system that I felt was the weaker side of the story, which was a little bit of a shame for me.
Mm. I also, and again, this kind of builds into something that, well, that will come up later, but in book one, I really appreciated that we got to see some of what was going on in the land beyond the castle, and we got a sense of there being a whole kingdom out there. And it was nice to see that expansion of the fairy tale, because obviously the focus is usually in Beauty and the Beast quite limited to what's going on in the castle, and maybe kind of whatever the Belle replacement character, where she's from. I liked that we got a sense of a world beyond that, and the kind of knock-on effect of the curse and what Ren had to do to try and protect his people, in terms of he shut down trade, hoping that he could kind of limit the danger as much as possible, and hoping that he could stop word from getting out of how the kingdom had kind of fallen into, I don't know, disrepair seems like an exaggeration, because obviously people are running their lives, but it's things are not going well for the rest of Emberfall, and he was trying to protect them, and you get to see the effect that that had. I don't feel like the rest of the books kind of continued to build on that though, but probably best to save that for those other books.
Another thing that I really liked about the first book is also, just to build on what you've just said, is I really liked that we got Harper's roots in DC. I like that we kept getting the reminder of what she's left behind and the trouble that she was in. Not just her, but also her brother and the situation with her mom. And I liked that we even had the phone. She had a mobile phone that came in with her. And I liked that we had that touch of relatability to our world within this world, because you don't tend to see that in fairy tales. And I just thought it was a really interesting way to like blend the two in. And I really, really liked that personal choice. I wish it hadn't have been necessarily forgotten about over the course of the books, but in the first book there were a lot more strengths than there were weaknesses, in my opinion, especially when it came to the plot and the story and the way it was told even as well. And it's just these nice little touches of things like the phone. I think another personal favorite for both of us was, obviously, when we discussed it last time, I think you mentioned this, but obviously now I got to that part, so I can fully appreciate it, when Harper scales down the side of the castle and falls mm-hmm. down the trellis. There was just these moments of pure humor in a very angsty situation that really did get you like laughing out loud and just feeling all of the emotions.
Okay, so book one was obviously pretty strong, and I think we've covered off most of what came up, both when we talked about it before and also things that we've found reading it more recently. So let's move on to book two. Book two is A Heart So Fierce and Broken. Now, something that you wouldn't necessarily get from the blurb of book two is that it's no longer focused on Harper and Ren. Book one is told from alternating perspectives, Harper's and Ren's. Now, while the setup for book two happens from, I believe, Harper's point of view, then we move into a different set of alternating perspectives. And it was an odd one. Bit of a mixed bag. Instead of following Harper and Ren, in book two, we are following Grey, who disappeared at the end of book one, trying to defeat Lilith to hopefully end the curse, and a new character, Leah Morrow, who's from Sile Shallow. Now, people had some strong feelings about this in the book club. Because on the one hand, a lot of people, a lot of us had said that one of the things we wanted from book one was more Grey. And this gave us more Grey. But on the other hand, Leah Morrow was a bit of a divisive character. I don't know if you want to...
Leah Morrow was not my favourite character at all, by any means. One thing I really loved about book two was the development of Grey. I feel like getting more of him was exactly what I was missing from book one. So to have that handed to me on a silver platter was the most brilliant thing ever. However, I feel like we were then needed to be given another strong female character. And unfortunately, what happened with Leah Morrow is she fell sort of flat compared to the outstandingly developed character that Harper was, which I think was the consensus for a few of the book club members, that they just found that she was like a poor replacement. And it also just seemed like her storyline was more of a convenience to further the plot on. She just seemed to be in the right place at the right time and sort of Mary Sue-ish, which for those of you who don't really know what that term means, it's literally a character that is perfect at everything, that has never picked up a sword and yet could slay a dragon with it. It's just sort of one of those characters that just sort of, okay, we've got a piece of this puzzle missing, I need someone to fill it, and that's Leah Morrow.
To give a little bit of background in case people are listening to this without wanting to read the books, Leah Morrow is introduced as somebody, she's from Sileshallow. Her mother is the ruler of Sileshallow, Caris Loran, and Leah Morrow has a sister, Nola Verin, and Nola Verin is younger than her, but their mother has kind of tapped her to be next in line for the throne. And the reason for this is because Leah Morrow is too soft. This is how she kind of has interpreted, I can't remember whether her mother has explicitly said as much, but basically her sister has that kind of vicious streak that their mother has. And so Caris Loran has said, Nola Verin's the one who should take over from me. Leah Morrow is a little bit more gentle. And I think part of, like you said, part of what feels like it makes her so Mary Sue-ish, and someone else pointed this out in the book club as well, is that it feels like her only flaw is that she's too nice, which is not a kind of flaw that makes for a very compelling character, really. Unless they're going to have to really overcome that in a particularly interesting way. But a character whose only downside is that they're just too sweet, she was never going to be a strong match for Harper and the force that Harper was in book one.
I agree. Yeah, she just came off a little bit flat, and it became the sole purpose of the book to show that, because she was then a love interest for Grey, was to show that he was interested in her and him. It's like I know we're gonna have to ruin it to discuss book three, but it's so hard. But Grey basically ends up getting into a bit of a standoff at the end of the book, and it's all about, even though it's not so much about love and it's more about power and taking control, it is sort of still about love, because his standoff and his personal struggle at the end of that book after everything else he's gone through is whether or not he will do this thing that will end up hurting her. Mm-hmm. So it just feels, it also underpins a disservice to him as a character, especially as the way he progresses over the book, because we learn throughout the book that actually he has magic, and, you know, he's this like forgotten son, and he's the rightful heir to Emberfall. And there's all these other undercurrents of him trying to discover who he is. And yet, right at the end, what underpins it all is, well, do you love her? Because if you love her, then you can't do this very thing.
You've got to protect her.
Yeah. And it's like, well, he's so much more than that. You sort of you sort of created him to just be sort of what females are normally portrayed as in a film, just there, just for the convenience.
Yeah, it is. It does feel like a shame. And I completely agree that his arc, if you could take Leah Morrow out of his development in book two, or not even take her out, but take out the romantic element, then you might have had a much more interesting... I hesitate to say you might have had a much more interesting story, because it's not like it wasn't interesting. It was a fun read, I thought. But I think you've put your finger on something really interesting there, that Grey ends up being led around by his feelings in a way that feels at odds with who he was set up to be as a character in book one. He was fiercely loyal to Ren in book one, And a lot of book two is about him kind of unpicking that. And what did that mean to him? And what did that mean to Ren? Because Ren does something
awful.
Yeah. And it leads Gray to question a lot of things. As an aside, one of the things that I thought was really interesting, and one of the things I liked in this book, was the way it acknowledged Ren's trauma.
Yes.
Particularly because, so just as you had Harper, who came from DC, Harper's brother was brought to Emberfall at the end of book one, along with his boyfriend. So Harper's brother is Jacob, or well, Jake, or he's called Jacob in the world, and his boyfriend Noah is training to be a doctor. I'm sure Noah will come back in a moment because he was a popular character, fan favourite. But I think Noah in particular brings the perspective of kind of our modern awareness of mental health when he references the fact that, you know, what Gray and Ren went through together was enormously traumatic. And, you know, they are going to be dealing with this for a long time. And there will be a lot of processing of that trauma to do. And it will affect the way that they make decisions. But yeah, that was such an interesting element of book two. Gray trying to work out, you know, did Ren care about me? Should he have cared about me? How do I feel about him? Because obviously at that point he knows that they're related, which is a weird thing to learn only after spending what feels like centuries trapped in a horrible curse with somebody. Like, after all that, after you go through this traumatic bonding experience, then it's like, oh, you'll probably never see each other again now. By the way, you're brothers. Of course, they do see each other again.
On a separate note, I bet the one thing, whatever happens, because we'll discuss this in book three, but I bet Noah will introduce DNA testing so this never happens again. Or sets up his own, like, Jerry Springer sort of show, like, you are not his brother.
So, yeah, I think if we could have taken out the romance, you could have delved into that a lot more, which would have been really interesting.
Yeah, because I think as well, even if she was introduced into the story as a companion, as in, like, you know, a more of a supportive role, and then by the end of that book, there is some, like, oh, are there some developing feelings? Mm. I think that could have still helped progress him and still had him having a love interest. But I think the way it was, like, as soon as they meet, it's like, okay, they're giving each other heart eyes already. And it's like,
yeah,
calm down, love. Put it back in your dress, will you? he's got stuff to do, all right? Just find out he's got a brother, and his brother's just done some really awful thing. And basically, yeah, he's got to run. So, you know, he doesn't have the time.
Yeah, just put it on hold, all right? Your flirting can wait. I think we're almost done with book two. It's a very long book. I wouldn't say it felt like it dragged, but I feel like there are things that probably could have been cut or trimmed. It's weird how much longer it is than the third one.
I think as well, you know, that in how I was just discussing about book one, there's like the convenience element, especially when it came to the magic. Mm. The standout thing in book two, the other convenience other than Liamara, was
Isaac,
who's like a creature.
The Scraver, yeah.
So in book one, we get told that Ren becomes this monster and he harasses basically the village around the castle. No other mention of any other cheeky creatures lying around in wait. And then suddenly it's like the story sort of got boxed in a position. It was like, you know what we need? Something like a dragon, but not a dragon. So let's get this creature. And I just wanted to make that point because it was the one thing that I thought, why has this been introduced? And then as we go into book three, I'll pick, obviously, this point back up. But I just thought to myself, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
And it was the sole purpose. And I was like, okay, this is another plot line of convenience that's actually not going to... It doesn't become, like, a favourite part of the story. Or it didn't for me.
Yeah, this was on my list for book two as well, the Scraver storyline. Because it just... like you said, it felt very convenient. The character, the Scraver, Isaac, sort of shows up quite near the beginning of book two. He's just like brought in a box and Gray is kind of nice to him. So he sort of helps him escape from the box at some point in a moment of chaos. It's not really something that he's doing out of particular generosity towards the creature. It's partly as a distraction, I think, to help him escape. And then Isaac shows up and is like, hey, I'm going to help you and I'm going to teach you how to use that magic for reasons.
Dot, dot, dot.
And he's got this, he's looking for something which he thinks he might find in Sile Shallow. And we'll pick that thread back up in as much as the book picks it back up, because the whole thing, it did really feel like it had been woven in either after the fact to make sure that Grey had someone to teach him magic, although why he couldn't have just figured it out for himself, I don't know, because it's not like there are any firmly established rules about this magic that would have contravened.
And the other thing is, a lot of his magic presents during pain. Yeah. So, like, wouldn't he have just done the dots together? You know, if there was no Isaac, I would have just thought to myself, okay, can you just give me that knife? I'm just going to lightly cut myself and see what happens.
Yeah, I feel like he would have got that.
Like, and I would have just, like, tested the boundaries of pain to see what I could unlock.
Especially because when it actually comes to it, a lot of the learning how to use it kind of does happen like that. Isaac does a little bit to help him unlock, and to help him sort of learn to access it, I guess. But when it comes to learning what to do with it, it's mostly about he has to learn in this moment because a circumstance has forced him into a situation. And then he's like, oh, I guess I'll figure it out. And so he figures it out. So I don't think we needed Isaac, really. Yeah, so book two, Swings and Roundabouts. It had some good stuff. And it had some less good stuff. And I think we pretty much unanimously agreed, didn't we, in the book club, that it's the weakest of the three for us.
Yeah, for sure.
So in book three, we return to having Harper and Ren's perspectives. We also still have Grey and Liamara. So book three switches between four. I really appreciated the fact that it didn't strictly alternate 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. It kind of did it in chunks. So you would have a few chapters that swapped between Grey and Liamara, showing you what was going on in Sile Shallow. And then you'd have a few chapters that showed Harper and Ren, giving you an insight into what was going on in Emberfall. I liked that.
I did prefer the blend in book three over the way we got it in book two. We just got a soul, like, kingdom side of things. I'm completely with you. I preferred as well all of the voices coming together. I liked that too.
One issue I had with it, because it was quite exciting in book two to be introduced to Sile Shallow and to get, you know, in Liamara, you kind of, I think one of the strengths of her as a character is that you got to see that Sile Shallow isn't just the viciousness that Caris Loran displays. There is more to it. There are a variety of people. I think that was an interesting point to have made, and it was exciting to get a window into this land, which in book one was very much, you know, it was the big bad. It was the evil place full of the evil people. And to see it humanized and given space to be a bit more complicated was fun. In book three, though, I really felt like the development of the world kind of fell apart. And we didn't really get to see any more interesting stuff about how Sile Shallow works. We didn't get to see any more interesting new information about how Emberfall works. We didn't get any sense of expansion of the world and the politics. And it's a shame because political maneuvering was kind of a big deal in book three. But because it wasn't being developed that much, it felt quite shallow.
Yeah, I like the point.
Hey, it felt quite Sile Shallow. it felt underdeveloped. Right? Did you feel that?
Yeah, I also felt there was a lot introduced in book three that just was not needed for the end of a trilogy. Like, it needed to be picked up way before book three. And one of those things was, we in book three in Sile Shallow, we get introduced to these rebel factions that want to basically take over the kingdom because they don't like magic. And we get this scene where Liamara is obviously as acting queen now. She's like, oh, hello. Like, she's welcoming these people. She's just done a dispute between land, which I thought was a bit odd, but okay. And then the next person, so she's just like a little bit like, oh, frustrated by all of that, is this woman who approaches and then basically tries to throw what is like a crystal at her. And it's sort of like, I don't know why I'm laughing, but it just ends up like setting her on fire. And then Noah's like, because Noah's there, because Noah's still in Sile Shallow, he's like set up a new infirmary. He's like, oh, you've just been Molotov cocktailed, love. okay, he doesn't say love, but that's what was making me laugh. He's like, oh, you've just been Molotoved. But I was like, why are we getting this introduction now? I know there needs to be some sort of undercurrent to the fact of all that has transpired at the end of book two. But I was like, why are we introducing this now when there's still a really large undone plot that's going off between Emberfall and Sol Shallow? And now you're saying that there's like little factions of riots going off within Sol Shallow, and
yeah,
it just became another thing that just wasn't needed, in my opinion, because it did nothing.
Yes, it didn't have any impact on the final conflict. That obviously the conflict that book three was building towards was, you know, are Ren and Grey going to go to war with each other through Emberfall and Sol Shallow? Is there going to be this conflict? Now, just like you said, those factions that we learned about in Sol Shallow didn't have any impact on what ended up happening there, nor was it really suggested that they might. Nobody had to intervene to stop them from doing something that might have had an impact on that. There was like one very tangential plot, or rather, there was a kind of a semi-important plot device that was tangentially linked to those factions, but there's absolutely no reason that it couldn't just have been an item that was found in Sol Shallow. Like, it didn't have to be connected to these anti-magic groups. And it kind of just felt like a way to show that people didn't totally trust Liamara. And like you were saying, it's just another plot element here for a single purpose, which feels like it could have been achieved in a more subtle way, or a more interesting way, or a way that just tied in more with the rest of the story.
Exactly. I think we could have even got, you know, Liamara, I don't know, talking to Grey and just going like, oh, I've just been in like council meetings all day because people just are very unhappy. And he's like, oh, are you okay? And she's like, oh, I'm just very stressed. And then we would have known that there was issues going off within the kingdom without us actually having to...
I mean, those people that she was talking about with the land, why not have them obviously not liking her authority? Why not have riots outside the castle with people who don't like the decisions that she's making? And, you know, she can even see one of those characters make an appearance again, unhappy with the way that she's ruling. Boom, we've just eliminated one an unnecessary plot and made one previously not super significant moment into a more integral thing. It feels like there are a lot of great ingredients in this book that were not well used.
Yeah, and I think I sort of came up in the book club, and I know I was one of the instigators for this conversation as well, in that the fact that I kind of wish it had been a duology rather than a trilogy. But even if we'd, because there were some elements within book three I really wish we'd had been introduced to in book two, so that they could be really well fleshed out. And one of them is the fact that Lilith comes back and she's sort of torturing and blackmailing Ren again, and using Harper, like, she keeps threatening that she'll send Harper back, and obviously Ren is madly in love with Harper, so he doesn't want her to go back to Washington DC. And because we haven't spent book two in Emberfall, when we get introduced to that, it's such a head spin that everything sort of happens very, very quickly. And because then we're jumping between two worlds, or two kingdoms, sorry, four people, it's a lot to keep trying to contend with when the book, as you pointed out when we discussed book two, is actually shorter than book two.
Mm.
That was just another thing about this book, that, like you said, all the ingredients were there. They just needed to be mixed better between the two books, rather than this is what book two is going to be about, because obviously I spent already book one in Emberfall, so I need to counterbalance that. And it's like, well, you didn't. Because the story that we were introduced to was about these three characters, and then you've removed two of them. And then when we meet them again, there's a lot of stuff that's been happening.
Yeah, it really felt weird to... It was so nice to come back to Harper and Ren in book three, but having not seen them for months, really, except through Grey's eyes in the brief moments that he was interacting with them, it felt like either we'd missed a lot, or that nothing can have changed. For example, for me, Harper and Ren's relationship felt like it was left in an interesting place at the end of book one, because at the end of book one, she wasn't sure whether she loved him or not. She knew she cared about him, but she had feelings for Grey as well. And there was kind of some uncertainty there around whether she had fallen in love with Ren, whether she would come to fall in love with Ren. He obviously was in love with her, and she was standing with him and trying to make a go of it. When you come to them in book three, it sort of looks like any uncertainty around that is gone, and that she is in love with him, and, you know, their relationship is pretty solid. But there is still a lingering question mark about her feelings for Grey. But there's no room to really explore that, which bugged me, because not that I wanted there to be a massive love triangle, because I kind of like that it didn't go down that route. But I just wanted her to think more about the complexities of her feelings for Grey, particularly in his absence. It would have been kind of easier to examine that without it becoming a massive who will she choose palaver. But her feelings for Ren, it felt like, okay, so are things the same as they were at the end of book one? So how come you're not still puzzling over that? And, you know, whether your feelings for him are changed or shaken by the horrible thing that he does in book two, you know, how have you two come back from the kind of the distrust there? It's like, have things not changed and for some reason they've been static for months? Or have we missed a bunch of development with these two characters that we were so invested in? It's like, it's a lose-lose situation.
Yeah, and we also missed these beautiful moments that I think were really needed in book two, of Harper even struggling with her own feelings about what's happened. I mean, this woman was ripped from her life. She went back. She got the chance to speak to her mother. And then her brother came with her. And then her brother leaves to go with what is now Dean the Enemy, who she has feelings for. And then she stays in a very emptiest castle where her boyfriend, not boyfriend, we're not sure because they've not really dealt with that situation, are just hanging around. And then when we meet them in book three, she's like in love with him, but also angry at him. And there's animosity and there's tension. Like these two people have been married for years and they've had a debate about what kind of china plates they want. And yet they've not resolved it. And I think it would have been really interesting to have at least more of book three spread out over those two books so that when we come back to all this action and this, what we're building towards doesn't fall as flat. Because for me, this book, it didn't really pick up what I wanted it to pick up until about 2/3 of the way in, because I kept going, okay, have I missed something here? Oh no, we've just not actually delved really into this. So sometimes, as much as I love being in Harper's head, she felt a little bit foreign to me because she's grown. She's grown and changed since book one because she's been through so much. And it's just didn't all seem to gel as well, which again, I just really love your analogy of all the ingredients are there. They're just not seeming to mix together all that well until everything's sort of forced to.
Yeah, it's almost like if we stick with the recipe analogy here, the Harper and Ren ingredients were supposed to be added at the same time as a bunch of other stuff. And then suddenly right at the end of the cake making process, it was like, crap, I didn't add the flour. Quick, shove Harper and Ren in there. Give it a mix. It'll be fine. And yeah, okay, the cake still rises-ish.
It's still edible.
But it's not the same as if you'd incorporated everything all along.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
There were also quite a few ideas that felt like they were introduced in book three and then left conspicuously hanging.
Yes, yeah.
And one of those is, it feels like it wouldn't matter if we went into details about it because it's so incidental, but I won't because we're going to try and avoid spoilers where possible. But there is a resolution-ish of the Scraver storyline, but it feels really tacked on.
Yes.
Like, oh, that thing he mentioned in book two that was kind of the only reason he was hanging around. Yeah, I guess we better answer the question about what was going on with that. Okay, here's your answer. Anyway, where were we?
Yeah.
Let's wrap up the end of this book. It just felt so arbitrary. It never really felt like we came to a point where I was like, oh, right, oh, the Scraver, now I see why he was introduced. He's become so integral. It was like, oh, okay, the ending of his story, it could have happened in a million different ways. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah. I mean, to name some positives of this book, though, I really loved Noah in this book. He was such a standout character for me, especially because there's a situation where Harper, because I won't go into it because I it's such a new release. I don't want to like ruin some of the big parts of this book. But Harper has to go and basically join up with the others, so to speak. And obviously she's reunited with Jake, her brother, and also Noah, Jake's boyfriend. And obviously there's a bit of animosity between Liamara's sister, for some reason, who just gets involved in everything. Grey, who she's not seen, and Noah's like little line is, just don't trash my infirmary, please. Like, just leave my well-made infirmary that I've now managed to create here untouched, please, if you can. And he had some really quirky, funny one-liners that helped break that tension up, which was really needed, I think, at times, because this book was so tense.
Yeah.
Because it had to be. I think it had to cram all that tension in. But he was just that perfect comic relief, but he wasn't a comedic character. Like, you didn't expect the comic relief from him, but it was a pleasant surprise. And I really liked him, and I wish we'd had a little bit more of him in the book. And also, I liked that Jake had become such a strong voice of reason throughout this book as well. He started to really stand out in book two, but I like that even he was one of the most logical characters within book three. And I just really like the Washington DCers. I feel like they really stood out within this book.
Sure. Yes. I feel like I've spent a lot of time talking about things I didn't like about book three. And while I do find it kind of difficult to pick out individual things about it that I really liked, that's not because I didn't enjoy it. I did enjoy it. I liked coming back to these characters. I liked being in this world. I just wanted more of the world. I was invested in the story as I was reading it, and I read it quite fast. You know, I didn't feel like I needed to take long breaks or anything. It didn't annoy me as I was reading it. But when I finished it, I did have a lingering sense of, oh, is that it? Is that all we get? So it's kind of a tricky one to talk about, because the things I liked about it are not really specific. They're not specific moments as such, although there were some great moments that I won't go into for spoiler reasons. You know that if you are going into it, you will get some really nice interactions between characters. You will get some interesting kind of political decision making. It's a very surface level thing, but I think it was a fun component of book three. And, you know, it's a book that I enjoyed. It's just there are a lot of nitpicks.
Yeah, it moves really far away from what we're told book one is going to be as well. Mm. What we're led to believe book one's going to be all about, it moves really far away from that. And I think that's what was the biggest downfall of book two, is because how do you go from such a strong book one that is set very firmly on a story we all well love already and know, and make it original? And the author did that. But I think the author, unfortunately, then found themselves in a very tricky situation of knowing how to get out of executing a book as well as they had done. And then when it came to book three, it's a loose way of me saying I like the ending, because I don't like all neatly bowed endings in fantasy books.
Mm.
And it doesn't. There is a lot of things left that I think are left to the to yourselves as readers to pin into place in however you want to see the story end, which in some ways is nice.
Yeah, there's a lot for you to imagine in terms of what might happen for these characters next.
And I like that, but I would have liked a bit more guidance, which is why I'm saying it's a loose like, because we are left with a lot of characters not really knowing their place anymore. And it's all fine, like me being able to imagine where I would like them to be, but I need a touch of guidance. And I think that's something to be aware of as well. If you're wanting to go into the end of this series and you're wanting it to be wrapped up really neatly, I'm sorry to say, but that's not going to happen for you. The way book one was wrapped up, I thought was quite, even though there was a cliffhanger, it was a nice, if that was the end of the series, if there was a standalone, you would have been satisfied.
You kind of knew what direction people were pointing at the end of book one, which you don't at the end of book three in a lot of cases. Yeah.
It's almost like there's going to be a fourth book, but I've done many research, and I have flat out found out that it's a trilogy. So that is not the case, but it does feel like there should have been another book.
Yeah, and I think there's a fine line between, you know, making it clear that in life things don't always wrap up neatly, which completely agree, and I like it when fiction reflects that. There's a fine line between that and feeling like you're setting up for a book four that you don't intend to write. And it felt like we were more on that side of things from... That's how I felt finishing book three.
Yeah, that's how I felt too.
So I think this may be a good time to kind of transition to talking about what we felt about the trilogy as a whole, since we're kind of talking about the ending now. And then from there, we can go into talking about the questions that the book club members asked. So in terms of kind of strengths from the book as a whole, I think relationships and characters continued to be a strength, even when we moved away from some of the characters that we really fell in love with in book one. So Jake and Noah, we got to see really come into their own in book two because they were with Grey, so we were seeing much more of them. And I loved the way that Jake's friendship developed with Grey. He really became kind of his right-hand man, kind of in the same way that Grey was for Ren. So that was a nice kind of development. It made for development in Grey's character as he learned to rely on somebody else the way that he had kind of been that person for Ren. And also, it was great to see Jake step into a position and say, you need advice. You need someone to tell you when you're wrong. I can be that person. And Noah was brilliant. Just a breath of fresh air.
Definitely.
The whole trilogy I found very easy to read. Even though book two was my least favourite of the three, I didn't struggle to get through it. And while, you know, I didn't like Liamara as much as I liked Harper, I also didn't dislike her, honestly. I didn't hate reading from her point of view. I just thought it was a little bit insipid compared to Harper's strength of character.
My overall feelings on the series, I feel like no matter what I say, I'm going to seem like I'm being really unfair. And that's mainly because book one for me was such an outstanding book one. Mm. And I say this as somebody who is not a huge fan of fantasy. I like paranormal fantasy, and I did like that I got a touch of magic in this because that really did help bring me in as a reader, because fantasy is something that I struggle to so much imagine without being clearly guided. But the characters really pulled me in book one. So I did feel very lost in book two for a really long time, especially then trying to imagine a different kingdom with people that I'm not very familiar with. So the same for me, book two felt weaker and I didn't enjoy it as much. Saying that, similar to Laura, I got through it relatively easy. The series as a whole is very easy to read. And while it's a young adult book, I do feel like it's on the younger spectrum of younger adult, especially aimed more at teens, possibly. The themes don't really delve too far, except some of the violence, I would say. The themes and the warnings, really, I would say, is mainly around violence. And there's elements of torture within the book as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously, there's discussions of mental health strongly in the second book. But other than that, I think young, like middle teen years would probably really enjoy this book and really fall just as hard as we sort of did into this. And then as I went into book three, I didn't know what to expect, which I think is why I struggled for about 2/3 of it. But when it came to the part where things were sort of joining back together again, I did really, really like it. And I sort of felt like I was returning back to a place that I've become very comfortable in. And I've ended the series on a happier note than I thought I would have done when I was reading book two. So I know that doesn't sound super positive, but if you'd have known my feelings more honestly on book two, and especially, and I don't mind saying this because I've read some comments that I've felt the same, and I just want to try and reassure some people that if you're looking at the series and you've really struggled with book two and you're thinking, I'm just not going to bother with book three, I really, really would change your minds and just consider reading book three, because I think you will get some payoff. You will get some familiarity that you had in book one. And I don't think you're on your own if you've struggled with book two. I think without this book club, I probably would have left it after book two, but I'm really glad I read book three.
I mean, yeah, I completely agree. I think book three picks up and is worth reading if you've read book one and two. It's interesting, you mentioned the fact that it feels like it's kind of on the younger side of YA, and that is possibly part of why there wasn't that much development of kind of the magic system and the politics of the world. You know, it's possible that that is linked. I think particularly the magic system, one of the reasons that it was so disappointing is because, you know, in book one, the only experience that these main characters have of magic is as a force that is, you know, messing with them. It is not something that they have any control over. It's all in the hands of Lilith, and she uses it to torment them. Now, in book two, when Grey discovers his magic and starts to learn how to use it, to me, that could have been a really interesting opportunity to establish some limits and some boundaries and some rules for how it works. It doesn't have to be enormously detailed. Soft magic systems are great. Nothing against a soft magic system. But it felt so vague that it was a little disappointing. And I think in terms of kind of the world building side of things, I felt like that fell off after book one, and that didn't really improve. The world building in terms of the magic and the different nations that we were reading about, if that's something that you look for in a fantasy, then I'm not saying don't read it, because I still thought it was a lot of fun, but just be aware that whatever you get in book one, that's pretty much your lot. There will be no further development of the world. It just continues to exist.
Yeah, I had a really strong time imagining what even Emberfall looked like, and if not for the fact that I think we would, obviously, we know it's a Beauty and the Beast retelling. I basically based a lot of my imagery off the last film of version of that, because I didn't get a really strong impression of what anything really looked like or felt like. So I think exactly what Laura's just said, it doesn't unfortunately get any better, but the characters do pick up, which I think if you went into it as much as we did, we fell hard for these characters in book one. We were like, ride or die. And I still think I would ride. Yep. I just probably wouldn't die for them all at the end.
Ride and accept minor injuries.
Yes, that is the rating for this week. That's what I would like slapped on this series. I think it's still worth picking it up and finishing it rather than leaving it hanging. But unfortunately, there are some flaws that you start to notice in book two, and some of them get papered over and some of them are just there.
One more thing that I just want to mention in terms of while we're talking about the trilogy as a whole. In book one, the difference between Harper and Ren's point of view felt really clear, and that was great. In book two and three, I thought the distinctions between the perspectives got a little fuzzier. And there were some moments in, I can't remember exactly where, there were some moments where I think characters from Emberfall and Cell Shallow kind of thought phrases that felt like they really should have been just Harper's, in terms of they felt too modern. And there were some things like every single character shoved thoughts away. Like that was a thing that happened in pretty much every perspective. Like Gray shoved the thought away. Harper shoved that thought away. And little things like that. It's not the end of the world. But when you're dealing with, you know, characters who are very different and have such enormously different kind of frames of reference, Emberfall and Cell Shallow, completely different places. There is no reason why people who grew up in Emberfall should think exactly the same as someone who comes from Cell Shallow. And even more so for Harper, who comes from a completely different world. It just would have been nice to see those distinctions stay a bit stronger. So the writing of the perspectives, a little bit fuzzy at times, but I think the thing that makes this series still worth reading, despite that, the characters are great. And they do feel really distinct when you're looking at them from the outside. You know, the way that they act and the roles that they play within the story do feel really distinct and unique to them. And they all have an important role. And yeah, the way that they kind of developed over the course of the trilogy was really interesting and definitely the highlight for me of this whole trilogy.
I agree. Hard agree.
Okay, so we are going to go through Seashell ratings and the all-important question. Okay, so we're going to go quick fire. First, we are going to give a Seashell rating for each book individually, then a Seashell rating for the series overall, and then, of course, finding out, drumroll please, whether or not the trilogy is coming to the Island Library. So, book one, Seashell rating, go.
4.5.
I went for 5.
Woohoo!
Book two, go.
2.5.
I gave it a 3. Oh, although I think 2.5 is fair. No, you know what? I'll stick with three. I'm not going to be swayed. Book three.
3.5. I really like the ending. That's what swayed my more.
Yeah, I'm going to go with 3.5 as well. I went for 3.5. High five!
High five! Okay, series as a whole.
3.
3.5.
Ooh, maybe mine should be 3.5, actually. I feel like I panicked. What did I went for? I went for 5... 3.5. What's the average of that?
I think it would be like 3.85 or something like that. I don't know if we had that. I don't know if we split Seashells that way though.
Okay, I'm going to go 3.5 because that averages out to 3.83.
I was so close and I can't even do
that. That was good. Good maths. Okay, so yeah, so my Seashell rating for the whole trilogy, 3.5. So, the all important question. Joe, will the Cursebreaker trilogy be coming with you to the Island Library?
It will not.
That's fair.
Laura, as A Curse So Dark and Lonely is already on your bookshelf, the rest of the trilogy will not take up any more spaces. It will just join book one. Mm-hmm. Will the trilogy be coming with you to the Island Library?
Yes, it will.
Woo!
I mean, woo, yes, but it's definitely not as secure in its place as it was when it was just book one.
Ooh.
When it was just book one, that was a pretty strong contender. And with the full trilogy,
made it shaky.
It might be one of the next ones to go. We'll see. We'll have to see.
Might be using book two as a bit of firewood.
Food for the fishes.
Which then leads us to the book club questions of the week, which is book club's questions of the week.
We had some really good ones.
We had some wicked ones. The first question that I have written down is, would you recommend the Cursebreakers series to other people?
It's a tricky one, that, because I did enjoy it. And I think there's, you know, as much as we've spent the last hour or so talking about things that are wrong with it, I think it's a solid trilogy. And just book one, I thought was great fun and definitely would have strongly recommended. Having read the full trilogy, I maybe would recommend other things first. To people who maybe don't read very much, who don't have as much time for reading as I do, I would probably have other things that I'd say are more worth spending time on. But for somebody who reads a lot, I would probably still say that it's worth picking up because it's very quick, it's very easy to read, and it is fun, and the characters, I think, are great. So that's where I stand on it.
I think I would recommend it, but I would probably give the warning that the first book is the strongest, but it's definitely worth following it out until book three. So I would recommend it to other people, but probably similarly to you, if there's another series and the person doesn't read a lot, I would probably say, oh, actually, I think you might like this series slightly more than this one. But if their hearts are really set on it, I'd be like, yeah, I think you'll have a wicked time, especially with book one.
Sure.
Wicked time is how I would describe the whole experience.
The second question that we had from a book club member, and I think this one's really interesting. Do you think that the author should have left it at book one?
Yes. Yes, I do. And as much as I got all of my prayers answered in the fact that I wanted more Grey, because his book ended up feeling more difficult to get through because of various other issues within it. Mm-hmm. I loved book one and I would throw hands for book one, and I don't feel like over the series that same feeling stayed the same. I mean, I know I just joked that I would use book two as firewood and I would never ever do that to a book, but that just shows you how disappointing book two felt compared to book one. And as much as I enjoyed book three, I think I could have done without the two of them and wholeheartedly still loved book one. I don't feel like it needed the other books, but that's just my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, it is. It's a really tricky one because I feel like we've kind of trashed books two and elements of book three. But there were some really great moments and elements of character development that happened in books two and three that I wouldn't have wanted to lose. I wouldn't want to get rid of all the stuff that happens with Jake and Noah. I wouldn't want to get rid of... that might be most of it. I wouldn't want to get rid of Jake and Noah.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I think I would have maybe...
But I think what I would choose to do, rather than just limiting it to book one, kind of what you suggested earlier, I would like to condense books two and three into a single book. Not necessarily cut loads out, but just have, rather than a whole book that's just about Grey and Liamara and their relationship, which felt like it kind of developed weirdly quickly and didn't feel like a good match for the dynamic that you'd had between Grey and Harper in book one, where that was so interesting. You know, take the emphasis off that, spread book two and three across all four perspectives. And yeah, rather than get rid of book two and three entirely, I'd have rather put them together and hopefully make a stronger duology than we had as a trilogy.
Which actually leads us really nicely onto our final question. If you were the author, what would you change to make the series stronger?
Okay, so obviously that was one idea.
You know that perfectly excused answer she's just given? That's one.
Put book two and three together. I would simplify some of the stuff that happens in Sile Shallow. As in, if you're not going to explore the stuff with the factions, get rid of the factions. If you're not going to really delve into the different political entities in Emberfall, don't talk about so many different people and places. So I would say, you know, take out some of that stuff that didn't feel like it was that well developed and instead focus that time and energy on fleshing out what you already have, what you're left with then. So, you know, dynamics within the castle in Sile Shallow and the magic that you've introduced. Spend a bit more time on that. Take out the Skraver and instead have Grey trying to understand this force that he has and have him thinking through what he can and can't do and working out the limits of his powers. That would be my suggestion. How about you?
So obviously, as I mentioned earlier within the episode, and also very similarly to the answer Laura's just given, I probably would have condensed it down to two books and made it a stronger series and equaled out the length of the books. I would not have changed book one, but how I would have made book two, and if we were going to keep book three, how I would make them stronger is shift Lia Mara's characterization completely and not have her as the cast-off heir to the throne. Mm-hmm. I would have her as the heir to the throne that was taken by Lilith. And maybe have her sister step in and remove the mother completely, because I found her characterization absolutely pointless.
That's interesting.
Soz. And have it that the reason that they're writing against Emberfall is because that's where their sister is. And obviously then make her a more compelling character. So when she's actually introduced someone to Grey, she's got a more interesting background than the fact that she's just the nice daughter. I would then also make sure that book two really brings in all of those characters' voices together. I would probably limit how much Lia Mara is in book two and have Harper be there a bit more. So then when we're in her head more in book three, it's not felt like we've had her shoved down our throats for most of book two and had the person that we've really connected with completely removed from us. Because I feel like that's really what got my back up, more so than anything else. It was the familiarity that I was missing, and you've taken that away from me. Yes, you've given me Grey, but I've not also spent that much time with Grey, so to speak, because it's more Harper we've been with the entire time. And I feel like then we would have really been able to flesh out what's happened since all of that's come apart. And then also built on more of Grey's magic system, as well as Ren's trauma and his feelings, as well as Harper's feelings, as well as even her longing for her brother. I mean, she's longed for a really long time to get back to him. And we barely had that really dealt with. They were glad they saw each other. Shit went down. He fucked off. She's just there like in a castle. And it's like, we needed a bit more, I think. We could have really built on that family, which is so important for me and Laura both as readers anyway. And I think just then the characters would have just stood out more. I would have also got rid of Isaac. I mean, so to speak, I think I've already expressed that feeling. And I would just restrict some of the other things that don't really add to the characters and what the characters are going through. Because really, the reason we love book one so much is because the characters are all going through so much. It doesn't really matter where they are. It's what they're feeling. And I would just focus wholeheartedly on that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So that was the Cursebreaker trilogy. Definitely a fun read. For all that we've torn it to shreds, I'm glad that we read it.
Oh, so glad. So glad. Yeah, it was fun. And like you said, a super easy read.
Thanks all for tuning in. Thank you, Jo, for your time this Sunday afternoon.
Thank you for having me. If you're interested in joining us for future book clubs discussions, you can go to our website, which is theislandlibrary.com. And if you click book club, you'll find all the information there on the most recent read, as well as a link to join our Patreon, which you need to do to be able to join in on the book club. If you want to just keep up to date with us and keep up to date with what we're reading, please check us out on Instagram at the Island Library Podcast.
You can also follow us on Twitter at the Island Lib Pod.
And we're also on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, which is also the Island Library Podcast, although you will catch us more frequently on Twitter and on Instagram.
Don't forget to recommend the podcast to friends and family if you enjoy it, and can't wait to see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening, for supporting, and thank you, more importantly, to my beautiful co-host for doing this once again with me.
It was a pleasure. See you next time. Bye.
Bye. My overall feelings on the series, I've just hit the microphone with my boob, I'm so sorry.